to another special edition of College Crosscast. I'm Ryan McDonald. I'll be joined by Chris shortly, as we have another special guest on this podcast. And in this edition, we have brand new head coach of St. Bonaventure, Mr. Randy Mearns. Coach Mearns has a long history in the sport of lacrosse. He's been at Canisius for over 19 years as both a player and a head coach. He's played in the NLL, and he's coached Team Canada to a world championship. And on this episode, we talk about his next challenge, becoming the new head coach of St. Bonaventure. Among the topics we discuss on tonight's interview, we talk about the challenges of creating a new program, or in this case, restarting a new program at St. Bonaventure. They had a little stint in the late 80s and early 90s. As well as the difficulties of leaving behind a place that's meant so much to him in Canisius College. Additionally, we talk about some of the fun things that go into taking the opportunity at St. Bonaventure and what fun things await him there as he gets the program all getting to go. We also discuss his boxing lacrosse influence on the game, some of his experiences from Team Canada, and whether or not they apply so much to his coaching style at the college level, the general geographic advantages and challenges of playing in Western New York, as well as some of the great things about living there as well, and a bit about the evolution of the sport of lacrosse throughout the eyes of his career, going from being a college player to a professional box lacrosse player to the game as it stands now as a coach for over 20 years. Here's Chris and I's great conversation with Coach Mearns here on College Crosscast. And thank you so much for joining us, Coach Mearns. How are you doing this evening?
Well, the evening is great. You know, like I say, the game never ever stops. It's awesome. My son Owen's playing in a little JV game out here, little summertime ball. So it's good to just be on the sidelines and be a parent. It's fun to do.
Indeed. You know, it's definitely got to be different from, you know, yelling at your own players when you can just, like, you know, watch other just people play and you don't have to worry about a lot of things. Just enjoy the sport.
Yeah, you just have to sit back and watch the kids just love it, right? And as we all do, we just love the sport. So they're, you know, they're out there, they're competing, and you know, at this level, you know, it's all summer ball. Does it really win? You know, does it really matter whether you win or lose? You know, but hey, they're competing. They're just working on their skills. And, So it's just great to just watch as a parent and a dad, you know, watch your son compete and all the other kids compete and not really have any kind of like recruiting intentions or, hey, like, you didn't do the 10-man ride. What are you doing? So it's good to sit back, and it gives you a little bit of reprieve. And this is why we love the game, right? It's just kids playing.
Indeed.
By the way, I want to say that you might actually be the first Canadian on the show, believe it or not, I think. I don't think we've had any...
That's pretty trippy.
So, congratulations on that. So, I guess, first off, before we get on to the big news with St. Bonaventure and everything, congrats on that. We always like to start off with a little bit of a This Is Your Life moment and talk a little bit about your past life. Obviously, former head coach at Canisius, as well as a very storied background in the box lacrosse game, as well as with Team Canada in the World Championships as well. So tell us a little bit about yourself, I guess, to start off.
Well, you know, I mean, you put it that way, it kind of makes me feel like I'm old. Maybe I am. I'm going on 50 sooner or later here. But you know what? I got to tell you, you know, I had the opportunity because of my brother back in the day, and he was a goaltender in box lacrosse. I was a 4-year-old little whippersnapper, and had the opportunity to go watch him, and just been kind of in the arenas back in Canada. And this one little, you know, younger guy came up to me. His name was Breen Schnurr, and he was just like, "Hey, I play lacrosse. Do you?" And I was like, "I didn't play lacrosse yet. I was like 3 or 4." And so then that just kind of started. So then you just start, you know, playing the game, and you get influenced by coaches, and, you know, at that point, it's just all for the love of the game, and you just play, you compete, you try to win, and you build relationships with your buddies and your friends, and, you know, you have loyalty to them, and all that good fun stuff. And then as it evolved, you know, I, I, uh, my brother Robbie was an athlete in the Paralympics. I don't even know how many that he was in, and the Paralympics and the World Championships. He's a Class 7 cerebral palsy athlete, and in my household, it was, you know, you can do whatever you set your mind to, and I got to watch that being 7 years younger. What that is to have no quit. What that is to actually, continue to compete and to do the things. And so, you know, so as a young lad, I got to watch that. It's been a big inspiration to me because I've been able to watch what he's done in his athletic career as he's kind of moved on. And being an able-bodied athlete, you know, I just felt like I would just disrespect him if I ever quit on anything, whether it was a loose ball, a ground ball, you know, any of those types of things. And I think that was a big catalyst for me, you know. And then I had the opportunity, to play in St. Catharines for the junior A's after we finished our minor system. And, you know, I had that. At that time, it was a lot of minor centers that had the opportunity to, you know, finally get together to play junior A because we played against all these kids, Darris Kilgore, Richie Kilgore, Stevie Fennell, Mikey Lyons. The list goes on and on, but finally we were all together, and then we were through a lot of hard work and a lot of tutelage of with Jim Brady and the coaching staff. We finally won a national championship, a Mental Cup, and then after that had the opportunity to play in the MSL, the Canadian Box Loop. Had the opportunity to come to Canisius, was part of that first recruiting class back in 88-89, and started in 89 and loved every minute of it, which was awesome. Like anything, and the best part about lacrosse, guys, is we go and we give back. So, you know, my mom taught me when I was 14, like, you got to go now teach the little paperweights, the 3 and 4 year old kids. And when I got back from Canisius, through some St. Catharines connections, Donnie Jones, Grant Phillips, Bobby Louie, we started to evolve the minor, St. Catharines minor field lacrosse. Kind of got away from box lacrosse a little bit and had a little hand into that to start to create the Ontario Minor Field Lacrosse League with a lot of help from and some other centers. It's great to see now 20 years after the fact that started way, way back in the early 90s, just that, all these kids are playing field lacrosse, up in Ontario, from April through the end of May, which is great, but that's the best thing about lacrosse. Like, we're just give back people, We want the game to grow. I always kind of had the thought process in some sense, and I don't know, if there's a better way to kind of put it. I don't really know, but we play this sport where it's kind of like the sport that maybe didn't get respect way, way back in the day. Obviously it's the creator's game, and how did it evolve? But here's what I know, a student athlete coming out of Canisius, St. Bonaventure, Johns Hopkins, guess what? We're not signing a $7.5 million contract year one coming out. So, it's about education. It's about being a good person. It's about, having relationships and getting back to the sport and giving, the younger generation an opportunity and to influence them and be mentors to them. So that's really kind of a general philosophy that I've had, for 19 years at Canisius, and now moving forward here to into St. Bonaventure. So it's a really exciting opportunity for me, kind of moving forward. And sometimes I feel like I'm a 19-year-old kid that was at home for 19 years at Canisius, and now I'm looking and saying, wow, there's another world out there a little bit. And so now I'm just, exploring and now getting ready to, tomorrow to start the journey at St. Bonaventure.
Indeed. That'll be a huge step in a different direction for you. I know I'll get to your box experience in a little bit because I know some guys like Brendan Bonberry and Brad Voigt who are up in the major series across and even like the Ontario Junior A League right now. But for most of your entire lacrosse career, it's been at Canisius in Western New York, with Buffalo and even with Rochester in the NLL. And you were the head coach at Canisius for about 19 years, including your playing days. So what was your decision into leaving a school that has been deep in your life, has been a really big part of your life, to go to somewhere, same region, but to go to St. Bonaventure school that's just starting up? Is it anything that kind of wowed you?
Well, you know, I think it was, you know, it's kind of like a lot of factors, you know, and again, by no means, I mean, the Canisius program is in really, really good shape. You know, the interim head coach, you know, Brendan Murphy is a phenomenal coach, right? He's in tune with the current roster and, you know, the recruits and the alums and, you know, all that good stuff. So it's in really, really good hands. You know, for me was, you know, it just maybe happenstance. You know, when St. Bonaventure got announced, and, you know, there was a podcast, and you kind of like listen, and you start to understand what the athletic director Tim Kenny was trying to achieve there. You know, from the podcast, it was like, wow, that's great. Like, it's another Division I lacrosse program. Like, that's awesome. Like, it's another opportunity for, you know, it's another opportunity to continue to grow the game. And it's another basically 40 other jobs for kids that want to play Division One. Like, it's so awesome for the sport, right? So, but then that's kind of like an afterthought. And, you know, as you know, the season ended, and you know, you start talking to people because lacrosse is a pretty, you know, tight knit community, and a couple of coaches have said, hey, like, they're going to be going fully funded. They're really going to support the program. You know, if you ever had any really interest in that, you know, maybe you should go explore that. And, you know, so, you know, I talked with my wife and we, you know, had some conversation, and, you know, and then I had a great conversation with Bill Maher, who's the athletic director at Canisius. And I said, you know, right now I just feel like, you know, I've been here 19 years. I don't even know what the rest of the world looks like. I feel like I need to go explore, or I never, ever will. I'll end up being 90 years old going, well, what if? But just never and never really knowing. And so he afforded me the opportunity to say, hey, you know what? Like, go see what that looks like. And that was great of him. And so we got finally up to campus and had some great conversations with Tim Kenny, got to meet the staff. When I rolled up into St. Bonaventure, I hadn't been back to that campus in 25, 26 years, because as a student athlete at Canisius, we played against St. Bonaventure when they had the program for 4 or 5 years in the late 80s, early 90s. And I roll up for my visit, and I was just like, I was floored. I'm like, look at this place. Look at this campus. Like, it's a gem, you know, in this rolling hills of the Allegheny, about an hour and a half south of Buffalo. And so right off the bat, I was just like, wow, okay, that's 180-degree different than Canisius, you know, being an urban campus. And so, but, you know, let's see what this is all about. And, you know, again, had the opportunity to meet the people. It was checking a lot of boxes in terms of you know, the academic profile. You know, they have, very, 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 very strong, very, very good academics. You know, it's a smaller school, you know, smaller class sizes. Everything's about family and community. So it's checking all those boxes. And then, you know, then I really started to have some great heart-to-hearts with Tim. And just trying to understand what his vision was and what they were going to do with the program. And, you know, a half an hour conversation all of a sudden turns into a 3.5 hour conversation. And, you know, you just feel the vision and the excitement of what they wanted to do, bringing back St. Bonaventure, men's lacrosse. And, you know, see, all of a sudden you have that. And then you start going through a lot of the other things. Like, you know, and again, it's all the other things. Is it good for the family? You know, what are the benefits to doing this if you're going to make this jump? And, you know, quite honestly, a lot of those things started to come into play and you know, checking those boxes. And then, you know, I didn't sleep for about 3 nights because, you know, hey, I spent my entire adult life at Canisius, and then here it is. Here's an opportunity to start a fully funded program with a blank canvas. And it was one of the hardest, if not the hardest, decisions that I had to make in my life, you know. And, you know, for me, I was just finally at the point in my career of saying, you know what, I'm ready to go take a bite out of the apple. And let's see what I can go do with a fully funded program. And so I had one final consultation with my wife, and, you know, made that decision. And like I say, hard, but you know what? I'm just ready to, you know, for a new challenge, you know, ready for a change. And, you know, at the end of the day, maybe change isn't bad. So I'm super excited to get started. You know, my first day is tomorrow morning. So I'll be up at 30 in the morning. I got some things I got to get done. I got to reconnect with, I call them the godfathers, the alumni of St. Bonaventure from way back in the day. I got to hire an assistant coach, and then I got to get on the road recruiting. So it's exciting times. I'm ready for the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, there's a challenge of starting a new program, or in this case, restarting a new program. But does it make it a little bit easier that it's in the same region as where you were in Canisius, so you've already kind of hit the ground running, knowing the Western New York, Southern Ontario landscape?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be any easier. It's just another program in Western New York. I mean, obviously there's Hobart, there's Nazareth, RIT, obviously Canisius, so I don't know if it's easier, other than the fact that, over 19 years, you just build connections. You just build relationships with high school coaches and club coaches, and you kind of got a really good beat on the scene of what this, what Western New York is, Rochester, Syracuse, and as you kind of figure out what that recruiting metric is. So I think that's an advantage. From this standpoint, it's an hour and a half south of Buffalo. Utilizing all the Canadian connections in Southern Ontario, it's not that far from the border. So you sit there and you go, wow, the opportunity to build, a very good program. It's not going to be easy. I've talked to some of these young guys that have started some programs, and there's some challenges to it. You got to get the right fit guys, but when I look at it, I'm like, there's so much lacrosse going on, not only in the local area, the Seneca Reservation and Six Nations and just all the surrounding area around Olean. There is, as you guys well know, I looked at it and I'm like, there's got to be 42,000 juniors right now still looking for a home. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we're not starting until 2019, and if we're going to do it right, let's make sure we got a year to recruit, and let's try to figure out what that looks like and what are we looking for in terms of student athletes and athleticism and, right fit academically. And I just, not only from a local geographic standpoint, but, I'm not going to leave any stone unturned. And that's where I sat there and said, I think we can build a winner here, because, that's the point. I want to take a bite of that apple. We're going to go fully funded right from the, from the get-go. We'll tear it all in over, a four-year period. But I looked at the facilities, the institution itself, and it's like, you can win here. So that's my objective, taking on this new challenge.
Exactly. So, with the new challenge, there are some teams that have also gone through new challenges. We just spoke last night to Brian Holman at Utah. We've spoken to Dylan Sheridan at Cleveland State. Joe Amplo and Ryan Poley at Marquette and BU, respectively, have started new programs. Will you probably reach out to them and say, hey, how is it to start, a brand new program from scratch?
Say that again, sorry?
So we just discussed with starting a new program. Do you think you'll reach out to guys like Holt or Dylan Sheridan or guys that started a new program?
Absolutely. The greatest part of lacrosse guys are willing to share their experiences. Now, at least I just feel that. Guys are willing to talk about, hey, that worked for me, that didn't work for me. Hey, here's some pitfalls that you might run through or come across. And absolutely, that's the greatest thing being part of this great game is guys are willing to share. Whether it's a story, whether it's a pitfall, whether, hey, here's probably a decent strategy you should look at. Again, we're all competing, but absolutely, I will. Reach out to them. I've reached out to a few, already. And hey, how do you do this? How do you start this? Because quite honestly, from a Division I level, I haven't done it, right? So there'll be some challenges. There'll be hopefully a quick learning curve, for myself, in this realm. But I also feel that, 19 years of experience and kind of sitting there saying, okay, well, not only from a Canisius standpoint, but having the opportunity to work with guys from a Team Canada national, world championships and, that national level playing, having the opportunity to play in the NLL with, phenomenal lacrosse players, the best in the world. And so now we get to kind of sit there and say, okay, well, who are we really looking for? What's position specific? What's that right person that we're looking for? to really start to build the foundation, you know, in 2018 when we're 2019, you know, and you know, we'll go through the due diligence. You know, my biggest thing is what I really need to know is I really need to know from a student athlete that we're recruiting is what their goals and their dreams are. Like, I need to know what they're trying to achieve, you know, and sometimes you'll go through it and, you know, you'll say, hey, well, I want to play college lacrosse. Well, I really don't know what that means. You know, do you want to be an All-American when you're a junior? Do you want to play in the MLL? Is it a dream of yours or a goal of yours to play for the Team USA? You know, and can we marry our, in lack of a better term, marry our vision and our dreams and goals? And do they, you know, can we marry them together? You know, and if we can, we can really actually do something very, very special. You know, but to do that and to kind of build, like, you know, at the end of the day, my goal is to win a national championship. You know, like, that's what I want to do. Like, in my coaching career, like, that's it. And to do that, that's no easy task, and there's not a lot of people that have done it, but if you can find the right fit guys and you can find the right fit culture, you know, and you're talking about it and you're dreaming about it, you know what? You can make anything happen, and that's where it kind of comes back to my brother. When he was kind of going through it, and you know, back in the day there was no political correctness, so he used to get picked on, and you know, and he'd come home and upset the whole bit, and then he realized he could actually just outrun able-bodied kids because he had no quit, he had heart, he had a goal, what he wanted to go do, and you know, that's been a great, you know, inspiration and example for me. So it's again finding all those guys, you know, in this great sport of lacrosse and throughout the North America and Canada that have that same shared vision, and then you got to know that, you know what, you got to go to work at it because it's not easy to do. It's so hard, like it's so hard to do. And but I'm confident and I believe in myself, and you know, like I say, I'm excited to get this thing going.
Now, Coach, you're in a unique position where you've coached at the national team level with Team Canada. Not a lot of coaches can say, you know, that they've coached a national team in addition to coaching a college team. So is there anything that you could take from the international game? I know it's a little bit of a different animal, you know, doing the World Championships and everything, that you can apply to when you're coaching in the college game.
I think there's a lot of things. I mean, when you're coaching at the national level, you know, you're not teaching somebody how to like roll the cage. Like you're not doing that. Like, it's more of a work with, you know, like, at least this is how I feel. Like, it's more of a work with. I mean, you know, and again, I mean, Matt Brown and Taylor Ray and Jason Levesque and Gary, like, I mean, the cast of characters from a coaching standpoint was amazing. You know, and we just kind of went to try to say, okay, well, who are the right fit people that'll allow you to achieve a goal? You know, like, that's one thing. I think the other thing that I take away with is, you know, you get to talk to these guys about their experiences and about when they were a kid and they were 11 years old and what made them and you know, what made them push on to become, you know, the great lacrosse players that they became. And you know what? They just love the sport. They love the game. And because when you got to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and you got to go for a run, like, that's not really enjoyable. Or every men's lacrosse player would be cross-country runners. See, that's what I'm finding out. That's not really the case, right? So, you know, you got to be willing to put in all the hard work. You got to have something in you. You got to have something in your heart that says, I'm just willing to go do this because I love it. Because, you know, as coaches, here's what you know. Like, you can't put it into a student-athlete. Right, you try to maybe taper it down a little bit. You know, if they're too aggressive, but you know, you can't put that in. You know, you either have it or you don't. And that's the thing. So you get to explore all these young minds and all this lacrosse talent, you know, throughout North America and international wise. And that's what I would take away, because these are the guys that dreamt about playing in the MLL or the NLL because they looked at it 10 years ago like, I want to be John Tavares or I want to be Casey Powell, you know, and then all of a sudden over time now they become the guys, but that's what it takes. Like, you got to be dreaming. dreaming about it. You got to be thinking about it. You got to love it. You got to have it in you to get to that highest level. And if you don't, you're not willing to put that in. You're probably not going to get to your goal. But and again, at the end of the day, you can put in all this hard work and still there's still no guarantee, right? So that's going to be a strategy as we start to delve into these young minds, these student athletes, and I feel that, you know, as we start to go through this process, there's really no reason why we can't get, you know, 30 of these young athletes, you know, in a 2018 class, and then just start to build from there, because they'll be the, you know, that this new generation foundation of Bonnie lacrosse.
You mentioned earlier, and in this conversation, we mentioned your box experience with the Bandits and the Nighthawks. By the way, I'm a Wings fan, so, you know, we kind of have a long rivalry with you guys.
Old school, I appreciate that. Old school.
Hopefully they come back soon, but I think from what we've heard, they will. But, you know, those two teams, and then, I mean, as a Canadian, you have a deep box experience playing in the Ontario Junior A League and the Major Series Lacrosse. And with how important is box lacrosse to the development of the overall lacrosse player, and how important is it in your mind for some of these kids to improve their skills and play in summer box leagues or box leagues overall, such as Major Series and Ontario Junior A, and including the new one in Colorado, which had a Canisius kid or two in there, in the Colorado College Box Cross League that just started from Matt.
You know what? I think, you know, this is what I grew up on. Like, I think it's essential. I think it's like, as a younger kid, I mean, look at it this way. Like, you're going to go, and again, I'm involved in all this youth lacrosse and, you know, all this great fun stuff. I got two boys that play. And, you know, you go out, you're going to teach, you know, little Joey and little Johnny about how they're going to catch and throw. Right, so they're going to be 5 yards away, and little Joey's going to throw it to little Johnny. He's going to miss it, and then little Johnny, he's got to go run 15 yards to go get the ball to come back to play catch, because you're just learning how to catch and throw. Well, in box lacrosse, guess what? You miss the pass, it comes right off the board. You got to corral a GB, which is a different skill set, and you get more reps. You get more reps, because when you've got kids that are 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and somebody throws you a bad pass and the ball goes 40 yards down the way, like, nobody really runs for that. And if you have to do that 4 or 5 times, well, I don't really like running to go get a ball way out there. Box lacrosse, no, it's coming out the boards. It's coming right back. I feel that, you know, stick skill-wise and playing in tight spaces, you know, and being able to put the ball on a line to a stick, you know, to a head, I'm open. I don't have to be open by 5 yards to mean that I'm open. I'm open by a half dozen. So what I was going to say is, my youngest son just finished the lacrosse game, so that's what that metric is. I apologize. So you get all these experiences, and that's the thing. And then having the confidence as a young player and as you grow, like, you know what? Hey, I'm open by a half a step, but my stick's open. I'm open. Throw me the ball. But now you have to have the skill set to throw it actually right to my stick, you know, not to a box kind of thing. So then you kind of harness that, and then a lot of those skills transition into, you know, into a field lacrosse game. You know, the great stick skills. I'm excited to see over the last 10 years, from a Canadian perspective, you know, more and more goalies, poles, two-way midfielders, defensive midfielders, some different kind of elements are getting the opportunity to get down to the NCAA and play. And you know, so it's, to me, I think it's such a great avenue to quickly develop and then be able to translate that to field lacrosse. That's just me being biased, because box lacrosse was really my first love. So
now, we've generally been talking with coaches of new programs too about the direction that they kind of want to go in with scheduling. Obviously, there's a lot of factors that go into it, but are you going to be also the type, between Coach Sheridan and Coach Holman, both of them were wanting a challenge right off the bat for his new team. Are you looking to trend in that direction as well when it's time to make the schedule for the first year? Or are you looking to do a little bit more of a transition period that's kind of been traditionally done with some new programs?
Yeah, you know what? I really, quite honestly, haven't even thought about that. I mean, I know it's part of the process. Mm-hmm. You know, as I finally, you know, get, strategies of which way you can kind of go from the scheduling, and how do we evolve? I know, can we? And it's kind of in its infancy, but being part of a conference is actually a very, very good thing. And how does that develop, and does that kind of help schedule? I feel at this point, it's probably a combination of both. Like, I've watched what Coach Sheridan did at Cleveland State, and because it's this development. When they had the opportunity to go play, say, some of the higher end Big Ten ACC schools, and maybe Cleveland State, didn't win the game. But at the end of the day, what I feel he was showing his players is those guys are talking about winning the national championship. And that's the level that we have to get to. At the end of the day, we're all freshmen. And I got to be honest with you, we had the opportunity to play Cleveland State, and they didn't play like freshmen. Like, he did a phenomenal job, him and his coaching staff, and they have phenomenal players, and they're only going to get better, right? So, I think, as we start to kind of hit the ground running here, I think we, start to figure out what that looks like in 19 and start reaching out. But, to be honest with you, it's something that I'm going to have to put a little bit more thought to and here in the next, couple of weeks. It's been such a whirlwind, over this last 2.5 weeks where, it's just been chaos and just trying to reach out to people and thank yous and all that good fun stuff. So, but we'll tackle that, and we'll find that strategy, and then we'll move forward with it.
Just going off of that point, I don't know if a little bit, or if you've even thought about it. I mean, you haven't thought about scheduling it, but have you thought about, possible conference affiliation already with you guys?
There's a few options out there, in talking with Tim Kenny, the athletic director. Is there an option in the MAC? Is there an option in the NEC? We haven't really had a lot of detailed conversation about that, but I think that, are those maybe the first two when you're kind of like looking at it? And then what's that process? And those conferences got to make a determination of whether or not, like, what's the benefit for them? I know this from a St. Bonaventure standpoint, we're going to fund the program. We're going to do it right. And so we're hopeful that we'll land into a conference. The other side to that is the lacrosse landscape continues to evolve and change year to year to year, with Utah coming in, which is phenomenal. Now you have, and where does that all go? But there's five teams right now once 2019 hits that potentially could be all independent, And then can you develop your own conference? I don't know the answer to this, but, could there possibly be ever, an A-10 conference? I mean, there's four A-10 schools now. Like, I have no idea. Is it something that we need to look at? Absolutely. Where that goes from here, quite honestly, I do not know.
So I'll dive in and interrupt with what Safe would want to say. Shout out to LaSalle, get VCU, LaSalle, George Washington, schools that have, A-10 women's programs on the phone, and hopefully we can start an A-10 conference too.
Right. Well, maybe. I mean, that's way above my pay grade. But this is the thing, like, you never ever know, just in terms of the growth of the game, or there could be some others. There could be some other mid-majors. You look at, like, High Point or, Furman at and all. Who knows, that how this all evolves. But I know this. Here's what I know. I mean, you look back, maybe 19 years ago, 20 years ago, and, there was one game that was on TV. It was the national championship game. I mean, in the springtime, I can't even turn on the TV without seeing lacrosse, right? I mean, it's on ESPN, ESPNU, ESPN3, CBS Sportsnet, like all of it. And so the more that exposure is out there, maybe some of these, institutions, as it continues to evolve, says, hey, if we actually fund it, maybe in 4 or 5 years, we can be in the Elite Eight like Marquette. And then all of a sudden, that'll be some national recognition for our institution. And that's the exciting thing about St. Bonaventure's as well. As we recruit, to continue to, evolve, the institution and maybe some different geographical areas. Is it, are we going to going to recruit some Washington State kids? Or are we going to talk to some Oregon kids? Are we going to recruit some Texas kids? You know, and so from an institution standpoint, they become a little bit more global and a little bit more national as well. And, you know, so all these things all kind of fit all these pieces of the puzzle, you know, of what institutions are looking for, you know, in terms of enrollment and you know, and some prestige and, you know, and winning, you know. And so it's going to be an interesting thing on how this all kind of evolves, you know. It's and that's the exciting part, because you don't even know what next year is going to bring, you know. And, and you know, you always hear some rumors, oh, they're thinking about it, and they're thinking about it. But I think, you know, as it continues to evolve, and the more and more that we're, you know, getting recognized in TV and promotion and the MLL, the NLL, and everybody wants this game to just take off, it's just a matter of time where, you know, when there's that breaking point, I believe this, that it does, you know. And then it'll be pretty amazing. And then maybe in 20, 30 years, maybe somebody can get signed to a $3.5 million contract once they come out of college. I don't know.
And I guess just to build off of that too, I know we talked a little bit here and there about recruiting. Obviously, upstate New York's a little bit crowded, and you also have the challenge of, you know, also having right next to you Central New York, which is a recruiting hotbed, but at the same time, you have a lot of local programs that are, you know, in that ground. But at the same time, St. Bonaventure also has a little bit of a unique location, being in the southern tier of New York in the Allegheny Valley. And the Allegheny Valley going down to PA, it's only really you and Robert Morris down in Moon Township. So I guess you've talked a little bit about this earlier, about everything. But given that you're in both a hotbed, but at the same time an area that might not be as developed, plus a little bit of the access, you know, to Southern Ontario, as we talked about a little bit earlier. Do you see that as a little bit of a challenge, or a little bit of a blessing in disguise? Do you think of, you know, just the combination of both, you know, being in a competitive hotbed?
I think it's a combination of both. I think it's more of a blessing in disguise. You know, in St. Bonaventure, this university that's, you know, beautiful campus, and you know, and from the sport of men's lacrosse, like nobody really knows about it. And you know, on my, you know, my visit, you start to, you have some conversation with some of the coaches that are there, and they're just like, if you can get a kid up on campus, like they love it, right? And now the function is now, okay, well now we got to get these kids up on campus. But I think it's, like I say, it's this blank canvas, and we get to make it whatever we want to make of it, you know. And you know, and because of Tim Kenny and his vision, you know, we're going to have the resources to do that. You know, and I think that we're going to be able to draw from a lot of areas. You know, and you know, and so as we start to kind of hit this ground running again, is you know what, it's this opportunity to sit there and say, well, there's so many kids playing, and everybody can't play Division I lacrosse. And, you know, coming back to the point is I believe, you know, that it's a phenomenal institution, and we're at its infancy, and can we evolve, you know, the sport of men's lacrosse forward at St. Bonaventure and win? Olean doesn't even have youth lacrosse. You know, another straightaway thing is like, I'm starting youth lacrosse in Olean. Like, it's just going to happen, because let's build from the ground up, and with the younger generation, they'll at least introduce some of these kids to the sport. But there's a variety of reservations that are around. We're not that far away from Pennsylvania, Ohio, obviously the upstate. And again, I feel like if we can get kids up on campus, we're going to recruit a pretty high end kid, because it's absolutely beautiful, and the vision is right. You know, we're going to do it right. We're gonna fund it right. And I'm just super excited to just try to get this thing off the ground. And like I say, tomorrow's the first day, and I guess I'll be up bright and early and start trying to make this thing happen.
All right, so couple final quick lacrosse related questions that I have, and these are going to be yes or no's for you, especially with the NCAA tournament. We saw a lot of this. Yes or no to having a shot clock? Yes or no to the dive coming back? And then yes or no to having instant replay in games.
Yes, yes, yes.
Quick and easy, I like it.
That was pretty quick, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a big fan of the shot clock. I think because you know what, like play. This is one thing, the reason why I love box lacrosse. So, you know, again, it was my first true love, you know, but I also, you know, have a lot of guys that have played for me, you know, at Canisius that, you know, because of closer to the border, they play box lacrosse, and then all of a sudden they go, oh, this is a great game. Well, here's why it's a great game, because it's fast, like you play. Like, you don't take any time off. Like, it's up and down, up and down, and if that's a resulting of a shot clock. You know, I think the concern, at least this is my belief, the concern is if there's a shot clock, you know, what happens when all of a sudden, yeah, there's 15 seconds left on the shot clock, and, okay, everybody's just going to go into a zone. Like, okay, just, you know, like, let them shoot from 15, 16 yards out, and we got good goalies, so everybody will make saves. Well, then does that then evolve into, okay, well, now we need a two-point line? And does that change it way too much? I think that's kind of that's evolution there. The dive, I'm fine with the dive, and I forget what the third one was,
instant
but
replay.
It was a yes as well. Say that again, sorry?
Instant replay.
Yeah, instant replay. Now, the kicker is how do you do that, though?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you do the instant replay? Like, do... You know, is it just in the national championships? Is it just on, you know, ESPNU? You know, you got to have the capability to do that. But I think that as more and more of the institutions are putting their stuff up, their games up on ESPN3 or the Patriot League Network, like all that stuff, I think that capability will continue to evolve. I still think it's a few years away. But, you know, that doesn't make sense to have that ability to do that. In some potential cases, yeah, I think it makes sense. It's just, I don't know if technologically and within all the institutions we're at that point yet.
So I lied about the final question, lacrosse-related question. This will be the last lacrosse-related question before we move on to, like, some lighter stuff. But being, you know, being in the college lacrosse landscape for the past 30 or so years, wow, that's a long time, how have you seen the game grow and change and evolve these past 30 years?
Well, I'll say this. I mean, obviously the technology, the equipment's all changed. I just think it's the players. I think it's the coaches. I think it's the commitment. I think it's a lot of that. Like, it's, there's all these other factors. I'll say this is, maybe I'll leave it off of this. So, you know, I do the color commentary for the Buffalo Bandits, so that's always kind of fun to go do, and you get to talk about guys that you know and brag about them on air and be the color guy, and it's all good. But, you know, when I go in behind the scenes and go down to the locker room and talk to Coach Cordingley or whomever, and, you know, I had an opportunity to play in the NLL for 8-9 years. I don't even know what that is anymore, but there's no way I would play in the NLL now. Absolutely not. These young men are so serious. The amount of, like, lifting and running and athleticism and size and skill, it's like a whole different animal now from when it was, you know, 20 years ago, you know, maybe even 10 years ago. But because kids themselves, they're playing high school lacrosse and they're looking at the MLL and the NCAA and saying, I want to be that guy. They could be... You know, I'm just coming from a youth event where my son just played, and you know, these kids know who Rob Pinnell is, and they're seven, and they want to be him. They know who Curtis Dixon is, and they want to be that guy, and they're already dreaming about it. And the biggest thing I like for me is if you follow a kid's dreams, like, they're dreaming about it, like, it will happen, you know. But then to do that, it's so hard to do. And again, it's just been such an amazing ride, and now I'm just going to get on a new ride. It's going to be like being at an amusement park, and start moving on from there.
Yes, we'll move on to the lighthearted bit of it. Given you've been spending a lot of your life in Western New York, whether that's Buffalo or now in St. Bonaventure, down the Allegheny Valley, what's some of your favorite parts of, you know, Western New York? You don't have to say the winters, because obviously lake effect snow is the worst, but otherwise, you know, what what do you really love about the region that's allowed you to, you know, basically spend your whole lacrosse career there, but whether you've been playing or coaching, that you love it so much about?
I apologize. You kind of busted up there just a little bit. Can you repeat that, like second half of that?
Yeah, so you've basically spent your whole lacrosse career between coaching and playing in Western New York. What's about the region that you, you know, love it so much? You know, it doesn't have to be, obviously not the lake effect snow and all that because the 100 or so inches of snow. But otherwise, you know, what draws you, you know, so much into the region that you love it so much that you've basically spent your whole career there?
Yeah, you know, I think it just, you know, just became home. You know, like that's, you know, probably as simple as you can kind of say, you know, being from St. Catharines, it's not that far from Buffalo in Western New York. I was always back and forth across the border talking, you know, playing lacrosse when I was, you know, in the young and the minor systems and the youth lacrosse. And you know, so you just get, you know, you just get comfortable in what it is. I had a great, you know, experience at Canisius as a player. You know, when I got married, it was like, well, where do we want to live? And it was like, hey, like, it's Buffalo, it's friendly, you know, it's kind of like infectious, you know, it's like if you're from Buffalo, you get a bad rap, but Buffalo is such a great town and Western New York and you know, in the southern tier, as I'm going to, you know, start to experience, it's like it's such a phenomenal, you know, area, and you know, but the only thing that we ever get really a bad,
you know, it's just a phenomenal area. You know, you gotta be a little hardy though. I mean, you gotta like some snow, but it's not that you get dumped on every day. It's just that every once in a while there comes a big lake effect drift across the lake, and you know, you get some snow. But then that's, you know, from a national standpoint, at least on TV, that's the only thing that you, oh, Buffalo, yeah, they just found it again, but. It doesn't snow every day in Buffalo. The folks are hardy, friendly, and it just becomes home, you know, and it's one of the reasons why I love it.
And, I mean, I go to school at Syracuse, so, I mean, to be quite honest with you, the snow doesn't bother me at all. It's more of the wind. It's more of the wind, because it can get you, especially in the spring when it's, like, 60 degrees out and you think it's nice, and then all of a sudden you have, like, a 20-mile-an-hour wind gust and it's 40, so it's, you know, it's...
That's why you get like those nice big down coats, and then yes. You put on a toque, and you're good to go.
Absolutely.
Oh yes.
So what's one interesting thing about Western New York that not a lot of people might not know about?
Oh God, there's all some difficult questions at me now. Something that's I would say this. You know what? Western New York lacrosse is really, really good. I mean, the youth lacrosse, the high school lacrosse, I don't feel enough kids get recruited out of Western New York, or maybe they don't put themselves out there as much, and I think that that's continuing to evolve, because there's a lot of talent here, you know, and you kind of sit there and you look at it, and I think it's starting to happen. You know, you look at, you know, for me, like a Louis Vaccaro or Adam DeMillo, J.D. Ricord, Connor Fields, you know, and I think, you know, Western New York lacrosse is actually starting to get a little bit better of a rep, where in the past maybe it wasn't one of the hotbeds that you really looked at first, but it's really starting to develop, and I think that's just kudos to, you know, all the area high school guys that have come back from playing college and give back, you know, and you know, the old stalwarts, you know, like Coach Greenway, you know, Jerry Severino, you know, these guys that are just involved in this area of Western New York lacrosse that have had a dream for, you know, 15, 20, 30 years. And for them, it's just starting now to all of a sudden pay a lot of dividends. And it's, you know, I'm just really excited and glad to be a part of it.
I guess another little lighthearted question. Any fun hobbies or anything that you could take advantage of in the Southern Tier? Maybe some hiking or some time on the lake going forward?
Well, I feel if you like skiing and if you like mountain biking and you like to be on the outdoors, you know, and that kind of, you know, floats your boat a little bit, I think it's a perfect match, you know. But, I think it's a perfect match. You know, that's not necessarily that you have to just, you know, that's the only thing that you want to do, but it is. I mean, it's, you know, you're in nature, and, you know, you never ever know if all of a sudden that an eight point buck deer just walks across your path. It's going to be a great experience.
So this is could be a two part question. The first part is, since you know you've been have a strong connection with the Buffalo area, are you a Buffalo Bills fan?
Toronto Argonaut fan.
Ooh, go CFL. I like it.
No, I'm just kidding. Obviously, when you ingratiate yourself into the West New York community, yes, you become a Buffalo Bills fan. Absolutely, check that box.
So how rowdy? I've been to a game last year against the Patriots, and it was a rowdy little crowd. How rowdy can the fan base get during games and for their team? And if you want to include your Argonauts, the Argos, who are a really good CFL team, go right ahead. Great Cup winners.
Yeah, and it's a phenomenal fan base in Buffalo. You know, it's that's the other thing that Buffalo's known for, right? If you say, hey, here's what Buffalo is, you know, and it's snow and it's the Buffalo Bills. You know, that's what pushes, you know, in some sense puts Buffalo and the Western New York community on the center stage because we have an NFL team. And you know, and there's a ton of support. I mean, the support for the local sports here in West New York is pretty phenomenal. And it, you know, and sometimes it gets a little bit crazy, but that just kind of comes with the territory. And so do other NFL teams too. So we're not way out of the normal, but we're kind of on that edge.
Chris, any other questions before we wrap things up? I guess.
I got one more. I mean, obviously you're a Canadian, and we like that. And I'm guessing when you were younger, you probably had an NHL team you followed.
Oh, absolutely! You know, as a young whippersnapper, it was go Leafs, go, man! I'm like, let's get it done, Toronto Maple Leafs. How could you not love them? And then as I got a little bit older and wiser, and then I became an Edmonton Oilers fan because like Wayne Gretzky's like the champ, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. We could have an Oilers-Leafs Cup final by the end of the decade with Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid.
Right, guys.
Yeah, you should have listened to our NHL preview podcast, known because we were so bad at predicting, right, Chris?
I think we had Chicago?
We all picked, like, Chicago-Washington Cup finals. That backfired in our
We're big NHL fans, by the way, too.
Yes.
We're better fans than predictors. All right.
Yes.
Perfect.
But I guess as we wrap up, anything else you want to say? As you know, you're looking forward, obviously, to day one tomorrow. When you wake up tomorrow, how you're going to approach the day? And just like, you must be so enthusiastic about tomorrow. And but I guess just, yeah, what are you going to go into work tomorrow feeling like? I guess like you're walking on a cloud, I guess.
Yeah. It's good. Like I say, though, it's going to be a challenge, but like I say, I'm just super excited. I'm excited about the vision. You know, I'm excited to get started. You know, it'll be a process, like anything. That's what I've learned. But you know what? Yeah, you know, Coach Meade said this to me one day, and we had a conversation. And you know, the best thing that we do as college coaches. Or when you kind of do some self reflection, is one, you know, we get to try to mentor young men. We get to try to influence and help lead them in their path of life. And as a college coach, like we actually just get to do what we love to do, you know. And how could you not just be enthused about that?
Indeed. Oh yeah, by far.
Alrighty, well, I think that just about does it. Thanks so much, Coach, for joining us on board. Best of luck to you and the Bonnies. It was a pleasure having you on, and we did a good job of winging it, I think, with with doing it on the phone, but I think it all came out awesome, so we thank you so much for hopping on board. You're Coach number 3 on our podcast. So we definitely appreciate you coming out, and we had a lot of fun with you. So thanks so much again, and best of luck.
Absolutely. Coach, thanks again.
Awesome.
Thanks again, Coach.
Awesome, guys.
Thanks again, Coach, for coming on, and best of luck on day one and the rest of the days that are ahead.
I appreciate it, Phyllis. Thanks for having me on. Have a safe night.
You too.
Yes,
Coach.
You too. Thanks so much. Well, we were so thankful to have Coach Mearns on. It was a great time with him, with Chris and I. Chris is still with me as some other big coaching news on the day.
Yeah.
As reported first by you.
Indeed, and then later confirmed by some outlets, including Edward Lee of the Baltimore Sun, that Kevin Connery is officially Michigan's head coach.
Yeah, so basically everything we said last night about, yeah, should be a pretty good fit for the Wolverines. But now making it official, University of Michigan tweeted out around 5 o'clock that they're moving in that direction. So all set in stone on that one.
Indeed. Well, first of all, it's a great hire for Michigan, and I think they were looking at defensive-minded head coaches. We were hearing Amplo, and we were hearing Sean Nadelin of Towson, and we've heard from last week from Amplo, or about Amplo, that he declined. Nadelin was also up next, and they were at it for a good period of time, but he officially declined Tuesday, and then they went right to Connery, who's third in line, and from what we've heard, he at first accepted, then declined, and then he went back again to accept. You know, I've heard money was an issue with all three, and eventually Connery turned back and said yes, but that's what I've heard. It's definitely true for the first two, but I'm not sure the change of heart with Connery. But I think it's definitely a step in the right direction. There's two questions left to be answered. One is, who will Connery bring on as assistants, or if he will keep his current assistants that he has at Michigan, and two, who replaces Connery at Maryland?
Yeah, that's going to be a very big hole to fill for the Terps, especially given how great their defense has been. But yeah, again, a good step in the right direction for the Wolverines. And as I said last night, you know, going against the grain, the Big Ten's looking more and more of an offensive league. Counter it and go defensive, and we'll see where that takes the Wolverines at.
Indeed. I mean, they get the guys. They have Avery Myers, and they have Brent Noseworthy. They have some good scorers. Tommy Hite was a really good goalie this year. They can get some guys and some top recruits that we've heard, especially in the 2018 to the 2019s, 2020s as well. But it's just putting the pieces together to form a puzzle. Maybe Connery might be one of the last remaining pieces to make that puzzle, make Michigan that contender. They have that facility coming in 2018. And we have to wait and see. And I think definitely another big part is the assistants. I mean, we saw with Chris Mattis with Maryland, the Florida Launch Fogo faceoff coach. He helped Austin Henningsen and especially John Guarino during the championship run become dominant Fogos. So, you know, I mean, the puzzle isn't done yet for Michigan. They still have some work to do. But this is, in my mind, not the best step they could have taken, but it's an easily a right step in the right direction.
Yeah, that's, I think, the big thing for Michigan. Obviously, you know, if they had a big-time hire like, you know, let's say a Nadelin or an Amplo. But at the same token, it's better that at least the Michigan administration is recognizing, okay, this is lacrosse, we got to put our hearts into it. We're not going to go into a direction where it's like, okay, we're just going to hire some Joe Schmo, run the team. We're not going to do it. The big concern I was having, you know, heading into the process is Michigan needs to show me something if they're really committed to this. And they're showing me something with this. You know, it's not the flashiest thing, but it's at least something where they can continue to grow as a program. It's not, you know, we're not talking about Michigan as a national title contender anytime soon. But at least this move, you know, gets them in the right direction. Maybe they can start, you know, putting together some good seasons. You saw they had the upset against Penn this year. That's a good building block. You know, maybe now, you know, the first goal is fifth place in the Big Ten in a year or two. It's going to take baby steps. But I think at least you're taking good steps. And a baby step's better than taking a step backward, you know, falling further behind or anything like that.
Absolutely. And I mean, they had a good year. I mean, they went, what, 8-6 this past year in overall play, but they went 0-the big thing is they went 0-5 in Big Ten play. If they can get at least one win, heck, even if they are competitive in every Big Ten game and maybe they lose by one or two, and heck, if they get a win, that's even better. But they take those small steps along the way, you know, trust the process for Michigan. I might as well just throw it out there since it'll be the day of the NBA draft, but we'll have Markelle Fultz. But, you know, those baby steps, as you said, Ryan, they get those baby steps along the way, and they should definitely be a program worth watching.
Yep, so it's something to keep an eye on, and as Coach Mearns said, it looks like Canisius will at least have an interim head coach, so it looks like their head coach situation, it doesn't look like they're going to be doing a search really right now. It sounds like Coach Mearns also thinks that the program's in the right hands with his assistants moving on up. So it looks like that the coaching carousel's not really going to be spinning too much from here on out.
You know, Brendan Murphy's at interim at Canisius. We've heard some whispers, but nothing very, very solid that we would know and we would find out about. But right now, just five coaching changes and five coaches that have been filled. Three of them are confirmed, or not confirmed, but are solid permanent head coaches, and two with Cornell, Peter Milliman, and then Canisius just yesterday with Brendan Murphy are on an interim basis.
Yep, so that's bad news for the summer of content, but the good news of the summer of content is we'll be back at it next week. We're going to have a little bit of a round table of some of the off-season moving and shaking, get you all set for the 4th of July weekend. Obviously, the big thing that's next on the to-do list in college lacrosse is the rules committee.
Indeed.
So we have that to look forward to. Additionally, we're going to have a couple of specials lined up ahead as well. We'll keep you in tabs with that when they come out. Again, my pet project I'm going to start getting off the ground in the upcoming weeks, but we also have a couple more things that Chris has starting to line up as well.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be constantly lining up the things during the summer, and we'll maybe unlike maybe the Utah podcast, which we recorded last night, and it's up right now. Well, technically, we recorded it Tuesday night, and we're recording this Wednesday night. So we'll spread a lot of this out. But I also want to like pop in before we end this podcast and just give a shout out to us and our listeners and our viewers. I mean, you know, it was reporting this Connery stuff wasn't the easiest thing. But as I said last night with our Utah podcast, that I felt confident. We all felt confident in what we were hearing, and we went with it. And there were some little developments along the way that contradicted our reports. And I mean, Ed Lee had something that an offer Connery wasn't offered at the time. He might have been true. He probably was true that he wasn't offered at the time. He might have been late earlier that he heard it, and he hasn't heard anything since. But we heard a lot of whispers. We started to get the pieces together early this morning. And by the way, this is Michigan, from what we've heard, is notoriously tight-lipped about this stuff. So the fact that, you know, us College Cross guys, who for the most part have jobs outside of running this site, got this scoop before full-time lacrosse writers is unbelievable. Set the fact that we got Michigan right is unbelievable. But the fact that us, you know, just people on the internet, who love to enjoy talking about lacrosse, and we love it. We have fun doing it. But doing this and getting this right, it feels that it's a pat on the back. I mean, not for me, and I mean, it's a great thing for me, but I want to share the love with everyone because, you know, Safe doing the Twitter account, Ryan with you doing the podcast, and every other writers doing their things and killing it wherever. It's a team effort, and just like Coach Mearn said, it's a family effort, and I mean, Holman said it last night too, and Dylan Sheridan might have proclaimed this, but it's a whole team effort, you know? Mm-hmm. If one guy, without one guy, and I honestly would say that if I didn't have Ryan, you, Art Ryan, Podcast Ryan, and Twitter Ryan, or Twitter Ryan, that too, but Twitter Safe doing the account, I don't think this this college cross would definitely be the same, and definitely the rebrand has helped. But
yeah, thank you, Luke Zimmerman, for changing everything in one week.
Big, without him, you know, I don't think we would have discussed really seriously and changing that handle. But yeah. But shout out to the ones that gave us proper credit. Shout out to the ones that, you know, kind of gave us credit, and then to the ones that needed to give us credit, get some work done. But
yeah. Going to be a podcast about Chris subtweeting.
Yep. We're on the map now, people.
But yeah, I mean, just mad props to Chris. Obviously, you know, everyone on this show, whether you're Safe or Jake or Adam or Marissa or Joe or Jason, everyone at the site does great stuff. But Chris,
or Hoya.
Yeah, and yeah, Matt as well. Matt it pops in from time to time as well. But I mean, Chris, I just want to put you on the spot because I mean, you've gone above and beyond. First with the reporting with the Michigan, getting all the sources in order and everything. And past two nights with the interviews with Coach Holman and Coach Mearns, both Chris reaching out to Utah and St. Bonaventure. So Chris also, in addition to doing the reporting, getting Mearns and Holman, that's also on him. So he's basically now the booker, the booking guy for the show as well. But he's been doing a lot of the legwork, so a lot of this, give your props to Chris on what he's been doing. And let's just say, media world, he graduates Newhouse in just 11 months.
Jesus God Almighty. Get ready, real world, because I'm going to be coming in a storm. But yeah, thank God I'll have a break tomorrow, draft party. Luckily, we'll try and get away from a lot of lacrosse stuff and, you know, enjoy my life. Being a Sixers fan, being with all these process people. But, you know, just grind and grind. And, I mean, personally, like, I love the sport, and I would like to do this as, like, a thing in the future. But, you know, hopefully this gets me a little bit further and a lot of everyone else farther in the sport. And it helps not only this report, but also what we've been doing with shelling out these Utah and St. Bonaventure podcasts. Shout out to those athletic departments for reaching out to us, by the way. We weren't really reaching out to them. They actually reached out to us, which was a really big surprise. And then being very, very cooperative in our efforts to get both Coach Brian Holman and even a future Utah guy, by the way, which we'll tease, and Randy Mearns on this podcast that you're listening to right now. So, you know, we hopefully can talk. Hopefully, we can get more coaches on during the summer and check in with how they're doing and little program update with some of the newers. Maybe, you know, Lloyd Carter of Hampton might be a possibility, but we still have to talk about discussings and whatnot and what we want to do and balance our content out. But right now, the summer of content has been pushing, and I think today, this week, I mean, starting last Thursday, it's with Utah starting up their program, Mearns being their head coach, our report from us, it's just growing the lacrosse world. And I mean, Just don't be arrogant. Just have an open mind on what you're doing, because we like to do it for fun. And if, you know, some people don't want to give us credit, then that's kind of on them. But yeah.
Alrighty. As always, if you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at RyanMcD29.
I'm at CF Jastrzemski. Safe is at Airy_Barrister.
And College Cross, you can follow at @college_cross. You can also follow College Cross on Instagram, @college_cross, as well as Facebook, iTunes, and Google Play for subscribing to the podcast.
5-star reviews and great reviews, they would be definitely helpful for us, and we love you back, so we give it back to you, the people.
Alrighty, we'll be back at it. We need a little bit of rest. We've been doing a lot of podcasting lately, so we're taking a little bit of a break for a couple days. Sometime next week, we'll have a little roundabout discussion for you to enjoy your 4th of July weekend, but otherwise, enjoy the NHL draft, the NBA draft, all that good stuff.
College World Series, if you're there, I'll be there Monday through Wednesday.
Alright, so for everyone here at College Cross, enjoy your week.
Bye, Felicia.
And stay hydrated, too. It's hot out there.